recorded on unceded Anishinaabe Algonquin territory. This podcast is also rated R and F. The F is for Fuck Whitey. Fuck White as a staff, record label, and as a motherfucking crew. Welcome, bienvenue à un autre épisode of Shut Up Podcast. I am your host, B Black, a.k.a. MrShutUpPodcast.com, a.k.a. Le Grand Papa B, a.k.a. The Fat Tal Solarin, a.k.a. Gaston Lucien Big Daddy Labrador. Who's Tal Solarin? I'll explain that later. All right, today's episode, today is May 24th, 2026, and we are episode 343, and I'll be talking about the Great Replacement. It's going to be a toss between the Great Replacement and growing up Haitian in the city of Ottawa, or growing up Haitian in Canada, something like that. I'm still thinking it through. But before we do any of that, we're going to start with some quotables and some randomness. Yo, that intro was kind of chill. I don't know. I might have an intro to stay. All right, quotables. Let's start with quotables. First one is, I'm going to say this one, but I might feel like a hypocrite. I'm going to say it. But I'm also attempting to internalize it. And it goes, self-love is choosing yourself. Even when no one claps, even when it's hard, even when you're still healing.
Message.
Damn, I mean, it's one of those messages that it's easier to tell someone than to, it's easier to, if you're a non-practicing person, it's one of those sayings that people like us like to preach to others and not adopt it. But you know what I mean. All right. Next one. It goes, I have a limited amount of time left on this planet, and I'm not going to spend it being a watered-down version of myself just so people can like me.
Message.
Ah, man, that reminds me of that link I played on the last episode about not shrinking. About shining. Anyways, to know what I'm talking about, you'll have to listen to the previous episode. Plug. This one is by Toni Morrison. It's the people who do this thing, who practice racism, are bereft. That is something distorted about the psyche. It's a huge waste, and it's a corruption and a distortion. Toni Morrison. Make sure I read that right. That is something distorted about the psyche. Yeah, okay, not their psyche. The psyche. It's a huge waste, and it's a corruption and a distortion. Oh.
Message.
What I like about that one is how racism has always been seen as something that gets done to, I mean, it is, but we rarely talk about the racists, how they're the ones who are fucked up. It's not just that, oh, I don't want to take the same bus as these niggers. It's a disease worth studying. That's what I'm trying to say, studying. All right, last quote is, from the book Rage of Dragons, and it goes, I can't imagine a world where the man holding a sword does not have the last say over the man without one. If you're not prepared to fight, you place yourself and everyone you love beneath the blades of others, praying they choose not to cut. I have felt the mercy of armed men, and they will never find me helpless again.
Message.
Deeper than Atlantis. All right, and Tal Solarin from the book Rage of Dragons. All right, that's it for quotables. It's time for some randomness.
So you're a philosopher?
Yes.
I think when introducing randomness, I should say that sometimes I'll start speaking and sometimes I'll just play the audio of what I want to talk about. You'll see, just for context, sometimes I don't bother introducing the audio, just, I need a better introduction for randomness. But yeah, all right. So, excuse me. Let me clear my throat for a sec. It always comes and goes in this. All right. Yeah, man. All right. First randomness is, this is me reaffirming that I fully enjoyed the book Rage of Dragons. I was a skeptic about getting the second book, but I'm like, who am I kidding? I always do that to myself. I'm like, I don't know, man, let me take my time. And then I got the second book and it's called, what is it? Something fire. Hold on. Let me. It's called The Fires of Vengeance. Yeah. Some of you Christians aren't going to like this book. Anyways, reaffirming. This is what happened. Like I said in the previous episode, it took me a while to finally get into the book. And what got me into the book is I found myself connecting with the main character, but more in, nigga, what the fuck? Stop being an asshole. Like, just because he's a stubborn guy, and I caught myself going from criticizing the main character to being invested in his story and then going, oh, wow, I liked it. Then I reread the book. So in the time, oh, wow. So I did that in like, I say reread, if you want to get technical, I did the audiobook. And I, so reread, went through the audiobook a second time and caught all the details that I missed the first time. And I gotta admit, what the thing that caused me to be lost at first is what makes the book awesome. Right? Now, I'm mentioning that I listened to the audiobook. And I'm realizing that I was not paying full attention to the book, to the storyteller. And one detail that I missed, which caused a lot of confusion, is the fact that the prologue, this is not a spoiler. I don't consider this a spoiler, but whatever. However, I'm going to talk about the book, but it's going to be spoiler free. But in case we don't share the same definition of spoilers, feel free to skip to the next segment, to the next randomness. You'll have to go to the website to get to figure out. No, I don't put the numbers in there. But anyways, so the story shared in the prologue and the main story, I missed the part where the author says 2 years, 200 years actually they use the term 180 cycles. And I'm assuming cycles means year. I bet this is one of those things that's in the book, in the glossary or whatever. But anyways, so a century and change or 180 years have gone by between the prologue and the main story. Because I remember when I was in the main story, I was all like, who the fuck, what happened to homegirl, homeboy, what the fuck, who are we talking about? I remember being confused about that. Two, and which makes it, what I like about it is I love history. I love hearing, okay, let me explain what happened then so you can understand what's going on now. I love those, that contrast or whatever you want to call it, the context. Two, it's kind of funny. There's a few times where the author changed the POV of the story. What's it called? Is it POV? Point of view of the story. And again, because this is with the audio, with the book, I would have noticed, okay, I'm reading. But I didn't pay attention that I was in the POV of a different character, which is why I was confused at the beginning. Again, I'm not blaming the author. This is more me. And also, the third factor is I had just finished Red Rising, the entire series. So, and I spent the whole beginning of this book going, you say nothing like Red Rising. I was being a bitch. It's like I was going from one relationship to a new relationship and kept bringing my baggage from the old relationship to the new ones. Okay, that's a bad example. But my point is, My ex used to fuck me better than you. You know what I mean? I was like, I was not opening my mind to this new experience. I was holding on to the old one and not allowing myself to embrace this new experience. But once I finally did that, I'm like, what? You know, I think what I like is, so the main character, his name is Tal Solarin. And I think what I like about, what gets me about this book or this story is how, and or the similarity between Rage of Dragons and the Red Rising series is how, and it's kind of weird, is how the main character, I found them inspirational. And to me, it's weird that a fictional character would be inspiring. It's kind of, I don't know, but it got to the point where, look, there's a part in the where the main character, so the story's about, you know, the main character, he's out for revenge. How does James Brown say it? Whatever. I didn't prepare for that one. But, so he's out for revenge, and in order to do that, he's like preparing. A lot of preparation involved. And how he grinds, the way he grinds in preparation for that revenge, it was inspiring. Cause this is it's kind of, I'm trying to think, it's what's that saying? It goes, I might not have the heart as I might not have your strength, but you ain't got my grind, or some shit like that. But they really paint this picture as a motherfucker who's like grinding. He's like doing a million push-ups. He's not doing push-ups. But my point is, okay, it's kind of like a montage in Rocky, like Rocky movie, when he's preparing to fight. I'm focusing on Rocky IV. It's like the montage, except a way better montage. You know, you gotta read the book for you to understand. But it's fucking inspiring. So much that I found myself thinking that, oh yeah, okay, when I said at the beginning, I'm Tal Solarin, but the fat version, because I'm fat, and but it's more what Tal is to the sword, I am to podcasting. I'm realizing that, because I was thinking about how because this is Sunday, and I'm like, fuck, man, I could be watching TV right now and shit like that, but I'm thinking about how I stay committed to my reschedule to recording a podcast, and I've established that I'm not just putting out episode for the sake of putting out episode. I'm also practicing my ability to tell a story. You know what I mean? To like catch myself, stop myself from saying you know, things like that. This is me practicing. This is me like shadow boxing. So yeah. Anyways. I'm the AKA the Fat Tal Solarin. I gotta work on that one. But yeah, man. Anyway, so I'm reading the second book. I'll tell you all about it when I'm done. But if you're looking for book recommendation, I recommend that one, and especially Black folks, because it's also like I was gonna say African inspired. No, it's not African inspired. It's more like it's like a story that takes place somewhere in this big-ass continent of Africa. Well, fictional places. It's not Wakanda, but I'm just saying it's the voice, the characters are like from the continent of Africa. I don't like talking about Africa like it's a country. That's why I'm being careful in my words. But it's African. It's African, right? And it's not just that it's African, but it's also like a positive view. For me, it's rare that I get a positive view of my ancestors. That's what I'm trying to get at. Anyways, dope ass story. Five stars. I wish I don't have a sound for it, but yeah, recommended. All right. Okay, that's it. All right, that's it.
So you're a philosopher?
Yes.
All right. This one is here. Let me just play the audio. Okay, I'm fuck the audio. All right. So I'm gonna keep it short and sweet. There's a video I remember watching, and out of the many, right? And it's a white man caught on camera. He's in his car. He's driving his was it a Tundra? Am I mispronouncing that? Pickup truck. Driving a pickup truck, and it kind of sounds like he's drunk, but he's yelling the N-word at just dropping N-bombs at a black driver. And the driver is just, he's not, I mean, he does respond, but he hits record. And the reason I'm sharing this out of the many, many occurrence of a white man yelling the N-word, it was for the first time I'm watching this dude, I didn't feel a need to have a clever comeback. Even though the other driver is like dissing him back, like he's got good comebacks to it, right? But in this particular case, I'm looking at this white man and I'm like, dude, you're embarrassing yourself. You're making white people look bad. There's a part while he's dropping the N-word, and you can tell he's like, yo, I want to hurt a nigger, and the best I can... It'd be different if he was lynching him, but he's not. He's just behind his pickup truck, and the best he can do is just, hey, nigger, you fucking nigger. And my favorite line, he goes, you're the reason most white people hate niggers. And I'm like, so? Maybe there was a time in my brainwashed time that I was like, no, I need the approval of white people. But I'm like, fuck. Fuck you and fuck them. Yo, not to say that it's not real. There are some black folks who rely on the approval of white folks to live their lives. I ain't the one. But it, again, getting back to this white dude yelling constantly, he just looked powerless. That's really what I'm trying to get at. And I'm not trying to, I know there's a lot of white people are like, yeah, you see, that's how you gotta fight racism, by ignoring it. And that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying, I feel like it was for the first time in my life, I saw this man for what he really is. Pathetic. Waste of energy. And it was just, anyway, I'm glad homeboy like reacted the way he did. If it was me, I would have probably hit record, but my comeback would have been like, dude, you're embarrassing yourself. And also, and someone else commented on the fact that homeboy might have been drunk while he's talking. Not that he excuses him, but it would explain why he's constantly like dropping N-bombs, like his mannerism isn't logical. That's what I'm getting at. All right, yeah, that's it. Like I said, man, this episode is rated R and F. F for fuck Whitey.
So you're a philosopher?
Yes.
All right, for this next one, okay, I lied. At the beginning I said I just play the audio and then play. Okay, for this one, I'm going to play this as a public service announcement. Initially, I tend to reject, because I'm an introvert. As an introvert, I hate small talk. But she makes an interesting point about small talk that, it has me thinking, and two, I used to see the world. You know what? Let me just play it and take it from there.
So people always ask me why I enjoy speaking to strangers, why I make effort with people I don't know. And here's the thing about people. I saw a quote the other day that summarizes it perfectly. A part of you is completely unexplored until you meet particular people. It takes different people to unlock parts of you that you didn't even know. You know, you'll go years thinking you know yourself, and then you'll meet someone and suddenly you are softer, braver, sharper, funnier, and they have just brought out this entirely different side to you. And not because you didn't have it, but because people open up people. So for me, every connection is worth that opportunity. If there is even the tiniest chance that I could meet someone who could quite literally change the trajectory of who I am as a person, I am going to take that risk. If there's even the tiniest chance that 5 minutes of curiosity or 5 minutes of small talk will give me the opportunity to meet someone who can change my life, I'm gonna do it. Someone who can change the way I think, give me a new perspective, I'm gonna do it. And a lot of the time you meet these people in the most unexpected ways. Humans are shaped by connection and we find ourselves in each other. So if you have the chance to connect with someone, just do it. You literally never know.
Message. And I mean, you probably felt the same way that I felt. I'm gonna stop myself from elaborating or for adding to what she said. She did make me think, and yes, I do relate to. I am the guy who is able to talk to strangers. I guess it's just, you know what? It's a longer conversation, but I'm gonna stop and say that I hear you, sister. And I'm saying this as someone who is, who convinced himself that, no, I hate small talk. I hate strangers. When the truth is, I used to be that guy who connects with complete strangers. Look, it was just powerful, man. Unfortunately, I don't have her name of this content creator. What I will do is the link will be in the show notes. And if you do know her name, let me know and I will add it to, I will modify the show notes. But yes, kind of powerful, man. Yeah. All right, this is it for...
So you're a philosopher?
Yes.
Randomness. We are jumping to the final say, but before we do that, we're going to take a quick break.
America brought over millions of Africans to work as slaves and invited immigrants to help build the country. The UK invited over 1 million people from the Caribbean and South Asia to rebuild the country after World War II. Australia needed to build its economy, so started inviting Asians. In the 1960s, the French government established the Boumediene to invite its Caribbean subjects to come build the country. So why are all these countries pushing the narrative that immigrants are replacing them?
Do you have a problem with immigration?
A little, yes, I do.
All right, the content creator, I'm not going to play the whole thing because it's a 7-minute, 18-second clip. And content creator's name is Adiv Unsolicited. Adiv Unsolicited. Again, link will be in the show notes so you can check out the full video for yourself. Homeboy had me thinking. It's powerful what he brings up, because where I'm going to branch off on is my version of the Great Replacement. He had me thinking about what it was like growing up Haitian in the city of Ottawa. Now, I was born in Montreal, but then moved to Ottawa when I was 5. Not me, myself, but you know what I mean, right? And I was thinking about how the specific part I want to attack about growing up Haitian in Ottawa, or growing up Black in Ottawa, is how racism had me feeling like I was only a guest in this country. I was just taking up space. I was the nigga sleeping on the couch like a freeloader. I was the freeloader of the country. See, it's not just the teachers who intentionally, unintentionally enforced that idea, but my parents were also had that attitude of, we're guests of this country. We need to be grateful to be here. We left a shithole. Yo, okay, hold on a second. Growing up Haitian, most of our parents, I'm sure I'm not the only one, but I know, if not most, a significant numbers of Haitians have a negative view of Haiti. Haiti might be their home, but they grew up with this mindset that, yo, we can't get our shit together. It's a disaster. Everything just like they internalized racism had them viewing Haiti in a negative way. Wyclef, I heard Wyclef say this. He said, Haiti has the worst PR, which is true. And trust me when I tell you. It's rare for me growing up Haitian to hear something positive being said about Haiti. And you know what didn't help? Fucking Christianity. At least, okay, I say Christianity. At least the Christianity that I grew up in. There was fucking church. It was always pray for Haiti. Pray for Haiti. Hey, fucking, I know, God, you're trying to fix Haiti, but we keep fucking up with this voodoo. I know you're still pissed at us for the Haitian Revolution, for killing all them white folks. I know you're pissed at us. It was always like, pray to this white Jesus to fix our country. So, yes, I grew up with the idea that us Blacks, us Haitians, needed to be grateful that these gracious Canadians open up our doors, opened up their doors and let us in. I grew up feeling like I was taking up space. Every time you hear about, you know, crime going on in the news and it's a Haitian person, you're like, fuck, this nigga's gonna get us kicked out of the country. But yes, I remember feeling like I was taking up space a well-deserved white person could have taken. How we, I was contributing to, like, maybe it's the empathy or whatever, right? But whenever some white racist would complain about, we're losing everything, part of me would be like, I didn't mean to. I just, I mean, the racism hit your feelings, but you were like trying to be sympathetic to this white person's feeling that they're losing something. And I'm like, I'm not really clear what you're losing on. I know you're upset. I know it has something to do with my skin color. But if I could fix it, I would, Mr. Great White Man who let me in the country. Yeah. I'm really want to like emphasize like the negative thinking that I had about my presence in this country. Every time some white person would be like, hey, like would act like, how do I say this? Yeah, you're just equal as you're just as equal as the rest of us. They didn't really mean it. Like it's honestly, it felt like their kindness was just straight charity work. We were the takers and they were the givers. I relate. That's the fucked up thing is I can understand. I'm not saying I'm agreeing. I'm not saying it's realistic. I'm saying that I've been drenched so much in this racism that I can understand these white folks feeling like, hey, we're being replaced. We don't want to be a minority in our own country. This is why I don't trust conservatives. Every time I still remember when we were the new people in the block. Okay. Granted, I was born here, but I still remember the voices of white folks being angry that we were here, that we were in their quote-unquote country. You remember all that. It's kind of like the people telling us to leave the country were closer to my ears than the people who were saying, welcome. I actually have a white friend, and I tell him that. He is... I've said that about Trudeau. I've said that about him. I have a white friend, and he's one of the few white people who I felt like, oh, wow, oh, okay. Oh, he's cool. He's cool. I'm not saying he was kissing my ass. I'm not saying he was like, you know, hey, black guy, whatever. There was something genuine about the relationship. And I've said this about Trudeau. One of the reasons I like Trudeau because he reminded me of my wife. He reminded me of the few white Canadians who are like, hey, welcome. And not like, welcome, freeloader. It's like, welcome to the Canadian family. We family now. I don't know what it's like to be adopted. But I imagine there must be a feeling of I'm an outsider. But the family helps you like, the love makes you feel like, okay, I may not be their blood, but I'm family. Do you know what I mean? Anyways, I think the thing that constantly followed me is that the racism. It's it. Hey, nigga, don't get comfortable here. You're here out of the kindness of our, some fucking, what's a bleeding heart liberal let you in this fucking country, but as soon as we figure out a loophole, as soon as a conservative government comes into power, we're shipping you back to Haiti. But I was born here. I don't give a fuck. Figure it out. Haiti, Africa, we don't give a fuck. One boat, one destination, and it's not here. Anyway, so where I'm going with this is going back to the clip by Aviv Unsolicited. Unsolicited, is he talks about, it's not just in, so because I'm Haitian, I grew up in Quebec society, but it's not just how, there's a reason why we ended up in this country. And it's not just because where we left was a shithole or was a bad place. I mean, sure, that was a contributing factor, but in this particular example for us, right, is I say us Haitians in Montreal, grew up in Montreal, is there was a mutually beneficial situation. On one end, my parents needed to leave because where they were, the future was gloom. Finding a job, very unlikely. And also, apparently, I guess it was the trend of, yeah, man, you want a job, you gotta go to the foreign country. You can't stay here. I think this is as close as I remember when I was gonna say that how I went into computers. It wasn't necessarily because of the opportunity, but I did luck out because I studied computers. I didn't know it was gonna boom, but I lucked out. And I get the feeling that when my parents chose to leave their home to come here, it was like, yo, there's just opportunities waiting. Like, we go to school, I'll find a job. Very likely I'll find a job. Sure, I'll be a taxi driver at first, but you know, grind a bit and then you'll grow up and be like some lower middle class person. But doesn't matter. There was opportunities, that's the point. So going back to what I was saying, it was a mutual beneficial agreement. And it's at the same time on the Quebec side, they needed, there's a thing called the Quiet Revolution, and they needed immigrants, French-speaking immigrants. So for the Haitians, they needed to leave, and they preferred, there was a preference for a place where they could also speak French. Quebec, they needed French people, and at the same time, because the Quiet Revolution, they needed motherfuckers to work in factories, drive their taxis. Well, I mean, they need teachers and also professional shit like that. But the story of every immigrant, right? It's like, hey, there's a hole. These white folks are too good to work in this shit, so bring in the immigrants. And what I'm getting at, and it's the story that never got taught or never got shared in school or something that my parents didn't recognize, is it was a win-win situation. Sure, they showed up in 73 and there was a recession, and that's when white people were like, fuck, them niggas are taking our jobs and stuff like that. But, you know, look, Haitians made Montreal. Okay, calm down. Calm down. Yes, I know they're not the founding fathers and everything, but they contributed to Montreal. Haitians are to Montreal what Black Americans are to the United States. A contributing force. They're not the end all, but you know, it's where would Montreal be without the Haitians? and the thing is, okay, I should bring up that links will be in the show note. A link will be in the show note to this podcast episode. It's called Haitian Diaspora in Quebec, Rhyme and Revolution. It's one of those things I've always heard, that Haitians contributing to Montreal society. It never gets spoken about. Like, they made contributions. Like, they contributed to the economy. They've, like, paid their fucking taxes. We deserve to be here. That's what I'm trying to get at. But the thing is again, the teachers had us believing that, nah, freeloader, get the fuck out of our country. Once you change your government, beat it. Once Duvalier's gone, beat it. Duvalier, okay, I can't do it. Anyway, so there's a link where you can read up to an article. I didn't read the article. It's called Haitian Diaspora, Quebec, Rhyme and Reason. But I did listen to the linked podcast episode by Strong and Free, episode 6. And yeah, it's the same title as the title of the episode is the same as the article. You can check it out for yourself. And yeah, no, they talk about how the history of why there's so many Haitians in Montreal. And that story is similar to all the Jamaicans in Toronto. I mean, I know. Yes, Africans too, but you know, mature. But what I'm saying is, shout out to all of us to our parents who showed up during the 70s. Anyway, yeah. Let me try to put a bow tie on this thing here. Yes. Racism. Going back to racism. I think I've allowed myself. I think this is what's happening, man. I think I kept my ears closer to the racist because they're the ones I told myself I needed to worry about. They're the ones. The other ones, yeah, whatever. They're flaky. They'll say that they're not racist and they'll turn out to be racist. But I remember, I think I gave their opinion way more value than it deserved because I was like feeling like, oh shit, these white folks are going to get upset with us. Oh shit, these white people are. Look, one thing for, as a black person, you know that when a white person feels threatened or feels inconvenienced, when they start saying shit about, yo, they're trying to replace us, it's, you need to be careful. I mean, that's usually how shit like Tulsa massacre happens. It's like some white person gets upset. They rape my woman. They rape my woman, you know, and then boom. January 6th type of violence. You know what I mean? I'm just saying it's I'm caught between because I'm like I said, this is fresh in my mind. I wasn't even sure I was going to take on this topic, but I'm caught between understanding this fear white people have of this quote unquote great replacement while also thinking about realizing that it's bullshit. It's like, hey, we made some contributions too. We didn't just come here empty handed. We brought culture. We brought food. We brought, well, I didn't, but we brought food, dance, shit. We're the reason why your fucking city's got, it's got any flavor. But not just that. We also went into your schools. We also the reasons why you can say that, hey, look at our high population of French speaking people in our city. We played our fucking dues. That's title payback. Okay, oh, take it. Anyway, I think I need to explore this thought further, but I just know that homie, Aviv Unsolicited had me thinking, just like the sister at the earlier talking about the small talk. But yeah, he opened. It was powerful. It was powerful. All right. Okay. I will. This concludes today's episode. I'm going to stop here. And yeah, if you got some thoughts, feel free to share them at the website at shutuppodcast.com. Email address is shutuppodcast411@gmail.com. Before I end this show, I want to remind you that this podcast is a safe space for my thoughts, and they're protected by the red, the black, and the green, with the red, black, and the red, blue.
Rouge et bleu. Rouge et bleu.
I represent and hold it down for black folks who grew up watching TV Ontario and Télé-Québec. I also represent and hold it down for black folks who said yes when they heard Big Rube ask,
are you an outcast?
This episode was rated R and F. The F was for Fuck Whitey. Fuck Whitey as a staff record, labeled as a motherfucking crew. Thank you for listening, and remember, please be kind to your favorite podcast. All right. Peace.
I'm black, y'all, and I'm black, y'all, and I'm black.